Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sunup. The Daily Sunup podcast is a conversation with the Colorado Sun. See our trust indicators at coloradosun.com/ethics. It's Wednesday, July 3rd. Today, the dust has settled from Colorado's primary elections last week, and Colorado Sun political reporters Jesse Paul and Brian Eason are here to break down what happened and why. They're also looking ahead to November and how what happened on June 25th could affect the general election. Before we begin, do you want to help the world and your wallet? From now until August 30th, when you open a new First Bank checking account, you'll help save bees, conserve water, and plant trees. Open a First Bank checking account today. Learn more by visiting efirstbank.com/green. First Bank. Banking for good. Member FDIC. Certain restrictions and requirements apply. See any First Bank branch for details. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. In 1875, Judge Elias Dyer, facing mob threats, wrote to his father, quote, "I don't know that the sun will ever rise and set for me again, but I trust in God and his mercy. At 8 o'clock, I sit in court. The mob have me under guard." Shortly after, armed men stormed his court in Granite, Colorado, and killed him. This act of terrorism was part of the Lake County War, a violent feud fueled by resentment from established ranchers against newcomers. A committee of safety formed, attacking its opponents, and eventually demanded Judge Dyer leave the area. Despite requesting help, Dyer received none. He returned to uphold his office and indict committee members, but they intimidated witnesses, leading to a dismissal of charges. No one was ever tried for Judge Dyer's murder out of fear of retribution. Before we continue, this summer, go wild for Front Range air quality. Walk, bike, or scoot for short-distance trips to reduce harmful ground-level ozone. Sign up for ozone alerts to know when it matters most. Learn more at simplestepsbetterair.org. Next, our feature story.
Good morning, Daily Sunup listeners. It's Brian Eason here to break down what happened in last week's primary elections. Those were for the state legislature as well as U.S. Congress. Joining me is our fellow Colorado Sun politics reporter, Jesse Paul. Hey, Jesse.
Hey, Brian.
There are a lot of important races decided June 25th. Let's start with the legislature and what happened there. You know, Democrats, of course, have large majorities in both chambers. So the Democratic primaries were where a lot of the action was. A lot of moderates did pretty well, but progressives also picked up some seats. Jesse, what were your big takeaways from this election?
Yeah, and something that listeners should know is something like 80% of legislative races are decided in the primaries just because of the makeup of these districts. Again, you know, Democrats either dominate or don't. Republicans dominate some of these districts. So the primaries are really important in a lot of these races across the state. So some of the big ones that we were following were the outcomes in House District 4, the Democratic primary there in Northwest Denver, where Tim Hernandez, a state representative, lost to Cecilia Espinoza. And another big one was in House District 6, where State Representative Elizabeth Epps lost to her primary challenger, Sean Camacho, a Denver attorney. So those were kind of the races that were being watched most closely. But there were other big races, as you mentioned, up and down the Front Range. Another incumbent that lost was Julian Marvin up in kind of the Thornton area, lost to Jackie Phillips in a House District race. And then you saw a lot of progressives lose in other challenges. One kind of change in the trend was up in the Fort Collins area, where tax attorneys Yara Zokai, who's a more progressive candidate in the race, beat former lobbyist Ethne Tryak. And then again, kind of talking about some important races in the Senate, where Obi Ezeadi, a Westminster city councilman, was running against State Representative Lindsay Dougherty in Senate District 19. And lost. And in Senate District 28 in Aurora, Mike Weissman, state representative, a more progressive Democrat, beat out Idris Keith. So it's hard to draw kind of a big conclusion from all this stuff. But some of the things that we noticed in terms of themes here was that, you know, the money didn't necessarily matter in all these races. It certainly played a big role. But Mike Weissman won, even though he had an exorbitant amount of money spent against him. And Yara Zokai won, even though she had an exorbitant amount of money spent against her. And though But on the flip side of that, in a bunch of races where candidates had no political group spending on their behalf, but their opponent had a bunch of political group spending, the candidate who had the spending on their behalf always won in all of those instances. So thinking about Elizabeth Epps' race, Obiezioti's race, and then a race in Lakewood with Kira DeGry Kennedy running against Rebecca Stewart. Rebecca Stewart won in that race. So those were some interesting takeaways. I'll also say that, as you mentioned, you know, there were some progressive wins. The Yara Zokaie race was a big win for progressives. Mike Weissman winning in a Senate race is going to move the Senate further to the left. And then also some other races that'll move the Senate to the left. You know, Lindsay Dougherty is going to be much more progressive than her the person she's going to be replacing in Rachel Zenzinger. Judy Amable is about as progressive as Steve Fenberg, but not as much of an ally as the governor. So there's going to be some split there. And then Kathy Kipp up in Fort Collins is going to be replacing Senator Joanne Janal. So these are folks, the folks they are replacing are people who were big impediments to progressive policy in the chamber just because of either their allegiance to the governor or because of their own personal political views. So, you know, thinking about things like the safe injection sites bill that maybe could pass in the current makeup of the Senate if everything shakes out in November, and assault weapons is another one that might be able to make it a little further. So some interesting results here are going to affect the legislature for a long time to come.
Yeah, you mentioned all the spending. We were hearing from candidates about it constantly in the days leading up to the race of, you know, $100,000 in this race, $100,000 in that race. Who was behind all of this?
Yeah, so in some cases, we don't know, right? A lot of the groups that were supporting the more moderate candidates in these races either didn't report their donors or got their money from a nonprofit that doesn't disclose its donors. But we generally know that business interests were behind a lot of the support from these more moderate candidates. A lot of the big money, almost entirely all the big money that was spent on behalf of the more progressive candidates came from Colorado labor movement unions, folks like that. They spent about $1 million in total across these races. And then we also found out today, recording this here on Tuesday for Wednesday, that Kent Theory was behind the Kent Theory-backed group that spent about $1 million in the final days of the primary to back a bunch of moderate candidates. So again, business interests, people who are more interested in kind of moderating the political views, that's kind of Theory's mantra, had a big effect in terms of the spending in these races. But as I'll reiterate, right, the spending wasn't always the deciding factor in a lot of these races. It did play a role. But I think our takeaway was, yeah, the money mattered, but so did who was running and who supported them. Endorsements played a big role here. The governor weighed in on a few of these races. Everybody he endorsed won. And, you know, you saw that folks with more allies at the legislature tended to do better than those who had fewer. So it pays to have friends at the Capitol, apparently, when it comes to Democratic primary elections.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And there's one other race, actually, I believe on the Republican side in the state House that still hasn't been called. What's happening there?
Yeah, so out in House District 58, which is kind of in the like Delta Montrose area, there were two Republicans running against each other, Larry Don Sukla and J. Mark Rober. And they are, as of the recording of this, separated by about 40 votes. And we're not getting, we're not going to be certified in this election until later this month, but we're heading into recount territory here. I haven't totally crunched the numbers here, and there's kind of a mathematically difficult recount bar in Colorado law. So I'm not sure if this is quite triggered, but certainly an interesting race and a reminder, as always, that every vote really does matter in some of these races. You know, this is a 13,000 vote contest, and this is a Republican leaning district. So whoever wins that is probably heading to the state house. So we'll wait to see the results of that on the western slope, but it's an interesting race for sure.
Interesting. And, you know, on the Republican side too, moderates did pretty well. A lot of sitting lawmakers won re-election, Senator Barb Kirkmeyer, who's on the Joint Budget Committee, among others. But let's move on to Congress now. What happened in all these congressional primaries?
Well, there were three that we were really following, and all of them were Republican primaries. One was in the 3rd Congressional District on the western side of Colorado. The second was in the 4th Congressional District on the eastern side of Colorado. and then also the 5th Congressional District, which is in Colorado Springs and El Paso County area. So let's just kind of break them down one by one. In the 3rd District, there was a 6-way race with a lot of candidates in it, and Grand Junction attorney Jeff Herb won with about 40% of the vote, and he beat out Ron Hanks, who had, I think, about 20% of the vote, and everybody else was kind of in the single digits. So interesting result out there in a primary where the candidates were pretty much unknown to a lot of the voters in the district. And I think we'll talk about later how that's going to affect the general election. In the 4th District, there was another 6-way Republican primary, and that was the one featuring U.S. Representative Lauren Boebert. She won by what I would call a plurality landslide of 44% of the vote, and she was about 30 percentage points ahead of any of her closest challengers. And so when you've got a six-person race, 44% share of the vote is a pretty definitive, decisive victory. And so she's heading into the general election, I think, feeling pretty good. And then in the 5th District, you had Republican State Party Chair Dave Williams, a former state representative, running against conservative commentator and activist Jeff Crank. And Jeff Crank destroyed, annihilated, eviscerated Dave Williams in this race 2-1. It was a pretty resounding victory for Jeff Crank, a pretty embarrassing night for the state party chairman. And something else I'll mention, just looking across these races, and we reported on this last week, you know, those who have been following our coverage know that the state Republican Party has been doing some pretty controversial stuff in terms of endorsing candidates in races. And Dave Williams was spending money out of the state party account to benefit himself in that Crank Williams race in the 5th District. Of the 18 candidates that the state party endorsed in the primary, 14 of them lost. So that's a pretty big, humiliating defeat for Dave Williams. And the candidate who was losing by the most, the last time I checked, the GOP-endorsed candidate who was losing by the most in a Republican primary was former state representative Janak Joshi, who was losing by an absolutely whopping 55 percentage points to state rep Gabe Evans in the 8th Congressional District, which is going to be a real toss-up in November that could decide which party controls Congress. So one thing I'll mention about these congressional primaries, again, we're focusing on the Republican ones here because those were kind of where the action was last week. But national Republicans were kind of holding their breath to see what happened here because there are some important races in Colorado. And I will say that they were all very excited with the results. The folks that they were backing and hoping would win won across the board. And so they're feeling pretty confident heading into November.
Yeah, that Dave Williams race was actually really important nationally, not necessarily for this upcoming election, but over time, they're thinking that Colorado Springs district is going to tilt more and more to the left as more Democrats move to that area. So what does this mean for the party moving forward?
Well, Dave Williams has egg all over his face, and I think that's a pretty generally accepted fact at this point. And there's already a growing push to remove him as state party chair. There's a vote scheduled now in August where there would have to be 60% of the state party would have to sign off on it in order to remove him from the state party central committee, to remove him from his leadership position. But he's trying to kind of flip the script here a little bit, say, okay, you know, the primary is over. Let's all unite and move on to the general election. I am getting the sense that Republicans who don't like Dave Williams are not heeding that call. They feel like he needs to pay some kind of price for everything that went on in the primary and the money he spent and the endorsements that he made and the way that he's been leading the party. But there's also some interesting questions, you know, about how the party organizes statewide heading into the November election and whether or not it's going to have to resource the types of voter data and get out the vote and door knockers and things like that that typically the state party will organize in order to win in some of these races, like the 8th District and the 3rd District, and a bunch of these state Senate races, state House races, that could be pretty important, that the Republicans are really trying to claw back some power here in Colorado after election cycle of just huge embarrassment and defeat.
So, Jesse, how do all these primary races set us up for the general election in November?
Well, as I mentioned, on the state legislative level, you know, 80% plus of the races are decided in the primaries just because of the partisan makeup of the districts. But on the congressional level, these could play a pretty big role. So starting with the 3rd District, you know, Democrat Adam Frischer is the Democratic nominee in that district, who lost to Lauren Boebert in 2022 by less than 600 votes, was really hoping to face former state representative Ron Hanks in that district. We talked about it last time in the podcast, the money that's being spent Democrats to try and prop up Ron Hanks, an election denier. They were hoping that he would be the candidate in that district. He lost again to Jeff Hurd. So you've got Jeff Hurd, who's a pretty moderate guy now running in this Republican-leaning district. It's going to be really, really difficult for Democrats to win in that district now unless they find some kind of angle of attack to win. So Adam Frisch, I think, faces a real challenge now in November. In the 5th congressional district, Republican-leaning, so Jeff Frank's victory, you know, pretty much seals the deal there. Same thing with the 4th district, Lauren Boebert, Republican-leaning district, the most Republican-leaning district in the state. She should cruise to victory in November, despite, you know, Democrats kind of hoping that they would be able to oust her. Again, with the decisive victories she had in the primary and the fact that the special election in that district showed that voters just really are not ready to back a Democrat there, I think that she's feeling really confident. The 8th district is interesting. That's one where, you know, again, it's a real toss-up district. And Gabe Evans is seen as a pretty good challenger to Democratic U.S. Rep. Yadira Caraveo. He's Hispanic. He's a military veteran. He's a former police officer. He served in the state house. He has a long time, you know, ties to the district. And Republicans are feeling good about him. Heading into November, Caraveo won by less than 2,000 votes in 2022. And there was a Libertarian candidate who basically served as a spoiler in that last election. So if Republicans can get behind Gabe Evans, if they can spend enough money, I think they're feeling confident. And then you've also got to take into consideration now everything that's going on in the presidential race with Joe Biden and Democratic doubts with him and you know, the fact that Donald Trump appears to be on firmer ground after the first debate. And I think that's something that people should pay attention to in races across the board in Colorado, especially some of these state legislative districts where Democrats won kind of riding on the anti-Trump coattails in 2022-2020. So I think that's going to have a pretty big effect heading into the general election. But, you know, big night, a lot of stuff happened. I called this the year of the primary. I think it didn't really disappoint. A lot of money was spent. And I think we're heading into November with a pretty good sense of how things are going to shape up. Going to be an interesting year.
Awesome, Jesse. Has anyone ever spent millions of dollars to get you elected?
I think my parents probably spent about $1 million to get me through college. No one has ever asked me to run for public office, shockingly enough.
All right, Jesse. Thanks for your time. This was great. I learned a lot. Hopefully our listeners did too. Talk to y'all next week.
Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Recent U.S. Supreme Court decisions sharply limiting the power of the EPA and other federal agencies could derail Colorado's approach to key health issues ranging from ozone to water quality to cuts in greenhouse gas emissions. Environmental groups and state leaders were stunned by rulings that reversed decades of executive branch power. The Supreme Court recently ruled that lower courts don't need to defer to agency officials' judgment when interpreting laws passed by Congress, and gave businesses and governments much more time to sue to block regulations even decades after they were written. Conservatives cheered the rulings. Colorado energy leaders say the state is set to produce a handful of geothermal plants within the next few years. Recent studies also found that Colorado can launch effective hydrogen energy projects relatively soon if the Energy and Carbon Management Commission and other regulators firm up rules for safety and the environment. State officials see fast-growing solar and wind power as the workhorses of Colorado's electric grid in the coming years, but they also say Colorado needs more renewable technologies like hydrogen and hot water power to back up other sources. Southern and Eastern Coloradans sought behavioral health care more often than people in any other region in the state last year, and may become a focal point for the state leaders now working to improve the mental health system. The new data was published this week as the Colorado Behavioral Health Administration launched an online portal aiming to increase transparency and accountability to help the administration offer better care for Coloradans who need it. The hub has data showing who is accessing services statewide and details on how to file complaints about licensed providers. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. Now, a quick message from our team.
Hi, I'm Tamara Chung, and I write about business and technology for the Colorado Sun. A large part of my beat is the Colorado economy and covering the ups and downs of losing a job, finding a job, running a business, all that fun stuff. You'll find coverage every Saturday in What's Working, and it's free because we feel all Coloradans need to know this stuff in order to stay better informed. You know, that's how we roll here, by the way. And that's why we'd appreciate your support to help keep the Colorado Sun sustainable. If you'd like to become a member, you can just go to coloradosun.com/join today. Thanks.